Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise at all, I like to talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people who crossed my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about harnessing and sharing this collective business know-how, the experience, and the wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, they're brave, and they're honest. There are laughs, and surprisingly, there's often talk of wine. We think you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So come on in, pull up a chair, let's get the conversation started.
Tani Westbury, welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited about learning more from you about your private practice journey because we don't know each other well, and I think we hardly really know each other at all, I think, fair to say. And I'm always intrigued by how people get where they are, and I'm always curious about what they're going to be doing next. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about how you kind of open the doors on Hopalong Occupational Therapy. So tell me, I can see from your LinkedIn profile that you did the obligatory time in the UK.
Yeah.
And then I guess you came back to Oz. And so how did you get started in private practice?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, first of all. Kathy, you certainly seeked me out, so that was great. So thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and talk to the other therapists that you link in with. So, yes, I suppose, my paediatric and private practice journey started a bit before that. I was actually employed by Margaret Hopper, who owned Hopalong Occupational Therapy for Children, as a new graduate therapist, put in the time and effort to train me as a new grad. And so I started doing paediatrics and private work for the first 2 years as a new grad, and then went overseas, that's right, for the obligatory 2 years experience over there. And then when I came back, you know, I was reflecting on my time in private paediatrics and went, you know, I'd like to head back there. I got a part-time retail job and went, no, this is still not for me. So I went back and started getting some part-time work back with Margaret, and then discussion unfolded that she was looking at selling the practice. She'd moved up far north coast up to Bellingen. So I was looking at selling the practice, and I think at this stage I was about 26 and went, I'm so young, I can't do that. But then luckily I had some wise people around that said, you know, you really like working with kids, you love OT, you've got some experience, why don't you give it a go? So I actually purchased the business from her at the beginning of 2007. So just over 10 years now that I've owned the practice.
Yeah. And that makes you such a pioneer, I guess. And you're not as old as me. No one's as old as me. But you've also seen the landscape change significantly. What would you say are the biggest changes that you've seen?
Sure. I think funding. I think recognition and funding have been some of the biggest ones. Certainly when I first started as a new grad therapist, Medicare rebates didn't even exist. So it's been great seeing those programs come in. Recognition of, I think it's a CDM now, a mental health plan for kids with autism, and certainly the rise in funding with FACSIA funding as well. And then whatever NDIS will bring, I suppose that's going to be another opportunity there. So they've been some of the biggest, certainly in regards to funding changes that I've really seen over that time.
Yeah, I'd agree. I keep forgetting about Medicare. It feels as though that's been there forever, but it hasn't. It really hasn't. And the mental health plan has come and gone and held on by the skin of its teeth. And I hope it has another generation as well, because it's so valuable for so many of the families that we work with. So if I come and visit you one day and I open the door of your clinic, what will I see inside and who will be in there?
Sure. That is also one of the changes over the last few years that I've had the opportunity of making. We've moved clinics as well to bigger spaces, which is wonderful. So we can see more clients and have more therapists here as well. So when you open the door, hopefully you would see my lovely receptionist, Susie, who, you know, has just got the biggest smile on her face. And, you know, a very kid-friendly waiting room before then going into our gym space and our therapy space that has, you know, all the things that, you know, a sensory clinic loves and needs to have, you know, climbing walls and swings and trampolines that make, you know, little kids' eyes light up when they walk in. So that's a bit of context. I do actually have two clinics. So other one's slightly smaller, but similar with, you know, gym style games and equipment set up.
Are you mainly clinic based or are you out on the road as well?
So a bit of both. I mean, certainly in the mornings and afternoons, we're clinic based. You know, that's a big popular time for our preschoolers and before and after school therapy. Most of the children that we do see are school age. Some of the preschoolers and just some of our early intervention clients come in the middle part of the day, or otherwise we can go out to school. So I'd say every day we might do one or two school visits, and then with clinic visits on either side.
Yeah, I'm always really keen to have therapists out in the community, particularly OTs, because that's where kids do stuff and learn, and that's where their support teams are. So for me, it always, and even still,
their natural environment.
I did a couple of creche visits last week, and it just, for me, it keeps it real. And I get to hear what the problems are and what people are stuck on, and I get to see my little Charlies and Sallies having their best go at play and being friends and being helpful and all of those things. So, yeah, I often hold the thought if I hear that people are just clinic-based.
Yeah, absolutely. And it helps you link in with the people that work with them more. You know, we see kids not even once an hour, you know, for a therapy session, but it's the teachers that see them, you know, every day for six hours or something. So it's really important to link in with them and provide support and training to them as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Very awesome, very awesome. So who's in your team at the moment?
Yeah, so I've got 8 therapists at the moment, a variety of full-time therapists and part-time therapists. And like most businesses, you know, have an amazing support team for receptionists, bookkeepers, marketing support, accountant, you know, a whole range of much better trained business people than what I am, that certainly, you know, support the whole hop-along practice.
Yeah, I think when you've got really big plans, which I'm pretty sure you have had for quite some time and have even bigger, shinier ones ahead, you've really got to outsource some of the genius. You've just got to get people who love bookkeeping and can't think of anything better than coming to your office once a week to do it. And you need an accountant who just is so delighted to be counting your beans and predicting how many beans you'll have in the future. And same with the marketing, because although you have a watching brief, I suspect, you actually really need to purchase other people's expertise so that you are free to be your best creative self and to lead your team and develop new products. And is it fair to say that's something you've really acknowledged and embraced?
I would certainly say in the last few years, certainly early on, definitely not. You know, I think OTs, we are very great at being generalists and we're very functional. So we're like, well, you know, I need to get in and do the website, so I'm going to get in and do it. But then, you know, the time that you, not necessarily waste, but the time that you spend doing that to get a very, you know, mediocre product as opposed to getting some professional help to do it, I think is really important. So I've certainly learned that more so in the last few years than early on when I thought, no, I'll just do it and put in the time.
Yeah, yep. There comes a time when we do actually have to face the reality of our limitations and save ourselves a few migraines and actually bring in the people who are really, really ace at it, really ace at it. So nowadays, what's your clinical management split? How did your week kind of look?
Yeah, sure. I certainly still like to see some clients. You know, that's what I went to university for. So certainly want to keep up being an OT. But every day I'd probably see, you know, a maximum of three clients a day. So certainly on a much smaller caseload than what my team is. And because the team is quite big, usually each day would involve some supervision with one therapist or two therapists on certain days if they're both in, as well as usually some type of marketing preparation, you know, starting to think about the next newsletter to go out or I've just started doing some little pop-ups on my website, so thinking about what could be the next one in there. You know, the end of last year we did a school readiness one. Now that kids have started school, we probably need to move on to something else. So keeping that up to date and keeping that fresh as well. And also the Facebook page too. You know, you need to be on that quite frequently. That's the nature of social media. So, you know, spending some time doing that as well. But certainly spending time with the team and staff, certainly one of my top priorities each day.
How much do you enjoy the social media piece?
I'm getting better at it. And yeah, I suppose I'm getting better at it and realizing that, you know, I don't have to create everything that I put on there. You know, it is about sharing. And again, finding people that are more experts, you know, than I am, and sharing what they have to say about different topics too. You know, and spending time finding, you know, what our clients' parents are really going to want to hear about. You know, it might be something a bit more speech therapy related or something behaviour related. And so, you know, sharing those types of resources too.
You've absolutely hit the nail on the head with having what I call an editorial mission, and that's actually really knowing who your readers and observers and likers are and what their challenges are and also what their delights are as well, and really finding content that I guess sings to you and your business brand but also really supports and guides them as well. And when you sort of understand that, and when you realize that you don't have to write it all yourself, it becomes lighter, and it becomes a real service. And it's not nearly the drag and the approaching tsunami of content and the anxiety about the sales, how salesy and cheesy it is as well. It's a real service, a real asset.
That's it. And I must say, now that Facebook is allowing you to schedule posts, that's made such a big difference.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, schedule a few, you know, a week in advance, and that's made a huge difference to how I do that too, and sounds like how you do it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've done a really decent job on adding that little scheduling piece. So it's just a little down arrow beside the publish button for those who haven't discovered it yet. So although there have been other scheduling tools available, they've been a little clunky and time-consuming, but this is just instant. It just, you do it while you're in there, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, it's so easy.
So I want to ask you about your awards, because I lost count. I started to count them, thinking that would be a really clever thing to say, the owner of the multi-award-winning business. But I've got to take my hat off to you. Some of my colleagues in other industries apply into award schemes the whole time, and they love it and they learn so much. But it's pretty unusual for me to hear about allied health professionals launching themselves into that competitive frenzy. I'd love so for listeners, have a look on Tani's LinkedIn profile, because that's where I saw them all listed.
Yeah,
and for years and years, you've been winning local council business awards. So if you're happy to share up the process and what you learnt from it, and obviously gloat about your winnings, but I think it'd be really, I'd love to hear more.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. So as you said, they are local area council awards, and they had a category for health and I think it's changed now to health and fitness, my health and fitness category. Yeah, I just got an email from Hurstville Council saying there's some awards coming up. And as we do, we put it, you know, aside and go, oh, do that later. And, you know, that mentality of, oh, you know, Allied Health, who's, you know, going to give us an award, or what am I going to say? But I sat down and looked at it and went, oh, well, why not? You know, no one else is going to blow my own trumpet. You know, I've got to get in and do it. So I went through and looked at the form and went, oh, I can probably answer that. And it was actually a really good, bit of a cathartic moment, actually, because it made me go through the last 12 months, where Hopalong has progressed, what I've been doing in the business, and it made me, you know, sit down and actually write that down. And then on the day that it was the first one needed to be submitted, I had a busy client day or I just remembered, you know, not really getting to it, and then looked at it and went, oh, it's due today. Oh, I won't win it, but you've got to be in it to even win it. So, you know, I can't even win it if I don't even enter. So, you know, why not? You know, so back then it was a fax that I had to send through. And so it's been a journey since then, and I think the first year going along to the award ceremony, I didn't win, obviously, as a first year, but as I've been refining my application skills, you know, and also sharing more of my marketing material as that's developed, you know, as well in part of that, was sending in that application form. And I think it was about, see, I can't even keep track of the dates either, but I think it was about 3 years ago that I actually won Business of the Year, so not just health business, but business of Hurstville City Council, and business person. And that, you know, was really affirming to me that, you know, we're on the right track, because not, you know, not a lot of people say that. At school, you know, you get certificates and trophies all the time, but, you know, in the workforce, you certainly don't. So that was really great, and really glad that I've, you know, spent some time putting those together as a reflection for me, but also getting some of that recognition, and certainly has been wonderful to see them all start to pile up now, which is lovely.
Well done. Amazing. To fit that whole process in on top of everything else you do, kudos to you. It's awesome. Are you going to be entering this year's?
Probably. Last year was just a runner-up, so I might try and look at, I think the challenge now is to enter some other categories, like there's a marketing category and a community contribution category and an innovation category too, so to look at some of those as well. So yeah, fingers crossed for 2017.
I am literally sitting here with my fingers crossed. Just before you said it, I thought, wow, that's good. And maybe you could even think about the Telstra business program and business women's program. You know, you can sort of scale up and scale out sometimes with your thinking around these things. I know a few people that have applied for the Telstra program and they have just adored the whole process. Although it was really, really challenging, the learnings that came out of it, they were almost so relieved that they didn't progress to the next round, because they really had enough learning to work with that made significant changes to them personally and also professionally in their businesses. So never say never.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Onward and upward, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I guess you've got loads of experience with marketing, and I guess we need to point out at this point that the marketing isn't just around Hopalong Occupational Therapy for Kids, but you've actually developed another product, standalone product. I'd love to hear more about this. I've heard about it clinically, but to hear it from you would be great. So, yeah, tell us.
Fantastic. So the Bounce Back for Kids program that I developed alongside a physiotherapist, her name is Trish Weasby-Roth, and she actually developed an adults program. So it's a spinal, her adults one is a spinal strengthening program. And we actually got together because she's my treating physiotherapist, as you often make these connections
in the health industry,
that's right. That's right, when I was having hip problems, so it was very vulnerable, I must say. She started talking about her children, and one of her sons has some learning difficulties, and so she was going through OT and was talking about setting up exercises every day for him at home. She'd made a little therapy gym space underneath in their kind of playroom of their house, and would set up an obstacle course for all of us to do every morning. And she went, wouldn't it be great, you know, if we could work together and, you know, workout activities that would really help these kids progress. And using her format from her Bounce Back Adults program, we sat down, it sounds easy, but we sat down over a two-year period to look at setting up some exercises and how we would also grade them. So it's a grading program as well. So, you know, how we would do those exercises, and then how we're going to score it, you know, is how we're going to measure, you know, kids' progress. It's great when we say, yes, they all improved, but to actually be able to score that. So we spent a lot of time going through assessments and looking at that. So now we do, as you said, have a standalone program that has 8-week handouts with photos and activity descriptions in them, as well as pre and post assessment questionnaires. We use the bot to brief assessment, and we're currently training other physios and other OTs to be able to purchase and run that program in their own clinics too. So very excited to be able to train other therapists in, you know, the activities that we've seen really help these clients. And fingers crossed this year as well, it will actually be published in a a paediatric journal as well. We've had a master's student that has been working on our results and collaborating our results to actually make them journal worthy, and hopefully we'll be able to get them out this year. So, you know, when you're in print as well, will be very exciting. And to, you know, the kids really progressed over the program, so, you know, to be able to see that in a journal too, and again be able to get it out to more people to be able to help their clients too, but also not put in as much hard work as what we do when we're developing, you know, a group ourselves or doing one-on-one therapy. The time with that, you know, it's something you can pick up and go with, which took a lot of hard work from our perspective, but it's gonna be worth it, you know, long term, absolutely.
So it's an evidence-based, do it at home kind of program, or will be evidence-based?
Yeah, that's right. So it certainly will be, and we've been collecting data on these kids for over, I guess, the last seven years now, and that's what's going to be published. So it's actually a small group program that you do in a small therapy group. So we run it from our clinic, an afternoon a week, over the 8 to 10 weeks that the program is done. So then kids get a take-home exercise sheet that they can continue with, and some of the equipment that they can continue with. We go through the exercises with them in a small group of 4 to 6 students, so we can make sure that they are doing the exercises the right way too, and can supervise, you know, the stability that they need, and yeah, just make sure they're doing it the right way.
Cool. Got it. Got a visual. Got an image. So to the extent that you are comfortable, are you able to disclose the business model that sits around it? Is it a box that people get, or is it a subscription or membership, or is it a franchise? How do people get their greasy mitts on it?
Sure. So I've been guided a lot by how Trish has been doing her program and things as well. But we've put it together as a package. So the package includes the equipment that the therapist needs to run it as a group. So it's a suitcase. Actually, it's more than a suitcase now. It's about 2 suitcases and 2 ball bags of equipment. Get the standardized assessment as well, all the worksheets that go along with it, and there's also a training day as well that you do with Trish or myself to go through every single exercise, so you know how it runs, what our goal is, and where it progresses to as well. There's no point just doing the same exercise over and over again. And so we've packaged that as a package. So it's a standalone package that you buy all of that and then take it back to your clinic and offer it to your clients there. We've got a therapist up in Tamworth that's running it, and she's got a Facebook page, and she's taken it to social media too, which is really exciting.
Wow, amazing. That sounds great. I guess it's a really amazing example of recurring income, where you put all that hard work in up front and you get it measured and you get it managed and you make it look beautiful, and then you look at the marketing and it will, I am absolutely sure, somewhat sell itself, and that you're less involved with it in years to come. Yeah, I can understand that there's a lot of coffee invested in helping that. Sounds amazing.
Yes. But when we look back and look at the results too, and see where these kids have come, and particularly with a lot of the kids that scored in the below average range, most of them, and I should remember the statistics off the top of my head, but most of them, you know, now perform in the average range, and that was really exciting to see, and certainly really great to have something on the side of just one-on-one therapy as well to offer from a business perspective.
Yep.
So yeah, absolutely.
Wow, very good. So to sort of switch, I think I almost know the answer to this question, but I probably don't.
Let's see.
What makes you and your team and your business unique? What do you do brilliantly?
Sure. Yeah, good question. And yeah, I think it's probably a mix of some of those things that we've already spoken about. You know, having programs to complement our one-on-one therapy. You know, trying to keep our waiting lists as small as possible. Certainly something for parents and the option of school visits as well. And I think also just having the variety of services that we do offer here, and having some of that experience behind us as well, that certainly I can bring to the team and support them too. But I'd like to think that, you know, we're exceptional occupational therapists, you know, and offering services that way.
Yeah. But you also bring to the team and the business a really solid sense of management and leadership as well. Where have you gathered that know-how from? What are you...
Yeah, good question.
Nervous laughter.
So, I know. Someone asked me not so long ago what postgraduate studies I've done in management and team management. And
where
I went, yeah.
Where did you do your MBA?
Yeah, that's right. It's a lot of, you know, experience. It's putting in the time. It's the trial and error as well, which is not always the best way to learn, but certainly some of that really helps. It's being open to ideas, and I think different books too. We get a lot from lots of different books and websites and things. I've done a few kind of just informal training courses as well, morning on marketing and some different ideas that way. But yes, unfortunately, no proper business training. You know, a lot of on the job, I think, which I think would ring true to probably a lot of therapists that are out there.
Yeah. Do you have some favourite books or websites or mentors?
Sure. I think one of the ones that has made a big impact to me was E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And just changing that mindset from, you know, being a great therapist or, you know, a great person that has a job, you know, as opposed to running a business that can run without you, and seeing the advantages of that. So that's been really helpful. And he's actually got a second book out, which I have downloaded but haven't read yet. So that's on my list of things to do. But certainly from the business aspect, that one has been really helpful. And from a team management approach, there's a book called 5 Languages of Appreciation in the workplace. And I think that's really helped me linking with my team members kind of where they're at, because not everyone is the same, you know, and not everyone is the same as me either. So, you know, what I appreciate in being told I've done a good job, or, you know, when someone buys me a chocolate bar or something, is not what they all appreciate. So it's working out certainly more individual type of management and appreciation, you know, and if I can reflect that to my staff, then, you know, again, they're going to want to come to work and be exceptional therapists too. So, yeah, those have been, I think, two main ones that have made a lasting impact.
I hear a lot about the E-Myth and sort of stepping out of the bakery to work on it.
And
it's really important, and I think the clarity and the storytelling nature of the book is really, really digestible and makes us feel really, really doable. And, yeah, it's a favourite of mine, and I have this battered copy with notes and bits hanging off it. But the second book I've never heard about. Thank you so much for sharing. While you were chattering, I was trying to very professionally scribble over on the side, and I will chase that book up and we'll put it in the show notes, because it sounds very appropriate, and it sounds like it's the sort of title that health professionals, I think, would really go for rather than a hardcore kind of leadership book. So thank you for that. That sounds absolutely amazing. So your business is rocking along. What are you most proud of?
I think in business, first of all, not going bankrupt, honestly, you know, like to still be in business. You know, I think the first 3 to 5 years, they often say, is the hardest in business, you know, and to actually be able to make a profit and you know, stay ahead of all the tax demands and things. So certainly to, you know, still be in business and not be bankrupt, I think is wonderful. But obviously heading on from that, you know, to be able to grow the business from where I purchased it to, both, you know, physical side and certainly income side, and a bigger team as well has been great, as well as, you know, the business awards are wonderful, and developing different programs is fantastic too. But yeah, certainly being able to grow the business has been great.
Your honesty is amazing because, you know, I've sat there and looked at the bank account and looked at salary, looked at the bank account and thought, ooh, yeah. This is uncomfortable.
And there's not much left over, right?
No. I've been in the bank manager's office in tears only a couple of times, but that's the reality that as the business owner, you are financially responsible for other people's lives. And I found that very energizing and motivating most of the time. And then I guess the other part of the time it was just somewhat terrifying. Yeah, it's about getting it done and getting enough happening to make sure that stress is really minimized. Yeah, and there's lots of ways around that to kind of keep the money coming in the door. You need to get the phones ringing. To have the phones ringing, you need to have a really strategic marketing and partnership plan. So, yeah, you kind of reverse back out the solution and you have a motivator to go really hard on that other stuff has been my experience.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. So on the unbelievable occurrence or unlikelihood that you have a whole free day in the business.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do with it? So if you had a whole 8 hours that was somewhat unscheduled, what would you love to get done?
Yeah, I think probably some of those marketing things that I've certainly put off for a while would be certainly from an output perspective, you know, to sit down and just quietly have the computer where I can, you know, organise the next few newsletters and Facebook posts would be absolutely wonderful. But I think also that the time that you spend, you know, educating yourself as well, you know, I guess ideally if I had 8 hours, you know, I'd like to curl up with a really good book, you know, and pull out, you know, the E-Myth Again or, you know, some of those other really good books that I have quite a pile at home of ones to read that I haven't got to yet. So, you know, spending time doing that. I'd probably actually head to the beach really if I could really, you know, have a free 8 hours and read there.
Honestly.
That's right. You wanted honesty. But certainly, you know, from you know, output business side, you know, looking at some of those marketings or also refining some of our templates, because they're, you know, a really good way of, you know, doing the work once and then not having to do it as frequently later on. So we do have lots of templates in place for a lot of our OT things, you know, but also good for our newsletters and some of those systems to get them, you know, documented, so you don't have to think about it, and someone else can more easily come in and do it if it needed to be done that way.
Yeah, absolutely. What practice management software do you use?
Probably the cheapest ones that we could find, which is probably not the best way to base it on. But our calendars and emails are all through Google, so they're all a Gmail hosted account. They do host but Gmail hosts our app Hopalong. So it does still look very professional, which I think is important. But we've got our calendar system all set up through there, and there's a section in there called Drive as well, and so you can share documents, which we find is really helpful working across the two clinics, and having, you know, the one spot for updated documents is in there. And then our accounting software and our invoicing software is done through MYOB. So we had some challenges early on because we had the two clinics. And, you know, just trying to find software that worked across both, because they're all quite computer based. But we found a cloud software that we could use through MYOB, and I think that's a monthly subscription to use that. But, you know, to not have to re-enter financial data is so important. No one has time for that. So we're really happy with how that's going.
So do you use something specifically to manage all your client data and details and billing and templates?
So client contact details and data can be stored in MYOB. So they get a card file, and so that's our contact details there. And then also that can run, you know, overdue accounts or late payments and things that way as well. So it does get managed there. And you can also export reports from MYOB as well, so I can export all the email addresses and stick them in a MailChimp, my MailChimp account, and email out my newsletter that way. So, you know, again, you don't want to be retyping anything.
No.
You know, if you can export and copy and paste, makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of MailChimp.
Yes.
Absolutely love it. I hate it too sometimes, but most of the time I absolutely adore it. How often do your newsletters go out and what's in them?
Sure. So last year I made a commitment to increase and do them more regularly. So years before, the last few years before that, I was doing one a term. So for a year, you know, term one, term two, term three, term four. Last year I went, no, I need to step this up a bit, and so I did them monthly. So I went from 4 to 12. But you know what, I did it and I can tick off every month last year that it went out. Didn't always go out at exactly the same time every month, but it did go out each month. So the main things, again, using a template in MailChimp to do that. I've got a section on our group programs, so our school holiday group programs and bounce back and the dates for that. Then I try and do a bit more of an educational piece. So pencil grip, why is pencil grip important? Sensory processing, and it will have a little picture and, you know, 100 words or something to describe, something like that, that can give parents a bit more information. Or a school readiness checklist, you know, can your child do X, Y, and Z? And then down the bottom I've got two or three extra little boxes that, you know, might be a Merry Christmas box, or I've got new staff members, or we're now linked in with this speech therapist, or something, you know, a bit more, this is what's happening at Hopalong type things in there. Yeah.
For anybody who knows me who's listening, they will know I'm a huge fan of newsletters, and many of my clients will now be doing a little eye-roll at this point. I think they're a great way of connecting and kind of building a bit of a community. And we used to send out a monthly one, and we did it for years and years and years. And most of the time, I really enjoyed writing it, most of the time. There are a few dark moments where I just did the face plant. But we didn't realise how popular it was until when I sold the business, the new guys didn't want to do it, and it stopped. And so people felt that drawn off our list. And they were saying, we didn't get it, could you post it, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And what we didn't realise was just the maintenance and the love and the engagement and the newsiness of it. Yeah. Was really what people were after. So we primarily sent it to parents, and we would also send it to educators and pediatricians and our allied health colleagues as well. Who do you send yours out to?
Yes, those are the people that we have on our list. Some schools as well, we send it through onto them. It's quite hard getting through to principals and things, but send it through to schools and preschools, particularly the ones that we've got clients in as well, and obviously ones that have agreed to be on our newsletter email list. But yeah, certainly mostly parents and some of our local therapists that we share clients with as well.
Yeah, when I kind of got into newsletter mode and I started to get really smart, and I had a section in my notebook where I would store ideas for what I could do in months coming up, and that really helped the writer's block bit when I had a bit of a half-baked plan.
Yes, I have one of those lists too. Yep, just in a word document, you know. I've got one for staff training too, you know, professional development ideas and newsletter ideas. So yeah,
Social media ideas as well. I'd gather some of that stuff.
Absolutely. And I've got, even on my phone, you know, on my iPhone, the notes section, you know, that's got lots of those ideas, because they always come to you. You know, well, whether it's at the best or the worst time, I don't know. But, you know, usually at a time when you're not at your desk to write it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have, the lovely thing about MailChimp is you can see who's opened it and who's read on it and who's clicked out and blah, blah, blah. Do you have an idea about the impact it makes to your current clients or future clients? Do you have any inkling about its value, if you like?
Probably not a true inkling. It would be good to, I think, look at doing an updated survey and seeing how many parents do open it. I think we have about, it's a high 20s, low 30s click-through rate, which I've been told is not bad. But again, you know, like what you were saying with your business, it wasn't until you sold it and stopped doing it that you then often see often see the impact. So it's always good to find some of that stuff beforehand. And again, talking to your clients or doing a little questionnaire might be the way to go about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're sitting here at the start of 2017 and you've obviously got 10 newsletters ahead of you. I'm sure there's a place on Google where you can say 10 awesome newsletter ideas, please, Mr. Google. What's the year got ahead? What bits are terrifying you and what bits are exciting? What's 27 going to bring?
Sure. I think it's going to be a nice year to kind of consolidate things. Over the last few years, there have been a lot of changes with changing premises. So we moved our Peakhurst one, and then within 12 months had moved Strathfield one, so from Croydon to Strathfield. And there's a lot of time, you know, checking out properties. And then even once you decide, you know, where are the walls going to go? Where are your swings going to go? What do you have to do to check that off and those types of things? So now that those have been done, for over a year or two, you know, it will be building up both those clinics, because obviously now they're bigger and we've got more space. So I think, you know, just consolidating on, you know, what we do best, and me putting in the time to my team to build them and their skills as well, and try and get both clinics to capacity, which will keep the accountant happy as well, which, you know, will keep me happy too, because, you know, then I can afford the holidays that I want to do, and, you know, those things that we're told, you know, make a good work-life balance when you get to actually think about that. So, you know, I think that will be no big changes, and I'm actually quite looking forward to that too.
Yeah, huge parity in a phase of consolidation. Huge, huge, huge. You can bed down your procedures and your policies and really ramp up the clinical excellence and really have a look at your systems almost in readiness, possibly for another kind of growth phase.
So
it's really important to pause at the right times, I guess, for the right amount of time. When does the NDIS come your way?
So in our specific clinic areas, it will be June, July this year, but surrounding suburbs have had it roll out into their areas already. So we've got a few clients are starting to say, you know, I've been to my meetings and some of those things. So it will be happening, you know, I guess from now onwards. We'll really, really ramp up kind of the middle of the year.
So you're registered and kind of good to go?
Pretty much. I've got registration for certainly two of the categories that I think are most appropriate for us, with early intervention and therapeutic supports. Certainly got those in and ready to go. So it'll, again, you know, working out our new procedures for how we actually do that, because obviously, you know, from the business side too, I don't want to offer all these services and then not be able to claim the cost back. So we'll be, you know, making sure we've got watertight procedures on how to progress and check that they got funding and check that we can claim through it as well. And like everything that's new, you know, there'll be challenges and a steep learning curve. But I think as an industry, you know, it's going to be very exciting in different ways that we can offer disability support.
Absolutely. I think it's such a game changer. And the way we're talking about the NDIS now, I suspect, is going to be really different to even 6 months, 12 months, 18 months' time. The people I talk to who have been in it for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years are really, you know, they've just hung on for the ride, and it's got more change to go and a lot more ups and downs, I suspect, to go as well. But it is exciting. It's something I never thought I would see in my professional life.
Yes.
So it really is quite remarkable, and the world is watching.
It sure is.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I'm just looking at the clock. My gosh, we'll be here for hours at the rate we're going. I've got two questions that I want to ask, and I'll save the one question I'm trying to ask all my very generous podcastees till the very end. But how about this for a magical question? If 50 grand just landed in your bank account, your business bank account, no questions asked, and it's all yours, insert greedy rubbing hands together motion, what would you do with it?
Yeah, good question. I think first of all, $150,000. I might look at opening up another little clinic. You know, I think there's pockets in Sydney that just don't get the services that they need, and that would certainly go towards that. I think that would be what I'd probably look at doing. And I mean, a lot of our therapy equipment, some of the, you know, really awesome therapy equipment is hideously expensive. So, you know, to buy some different types of swings, you know, would be really fantastic. And I guess, you know, fit out the clinics as well. Send the team off onto, you know, all the training that they could take, because that's also really expensive. Expensive to, you know, courses for $8,000-$9,000 plus. So I think that's where I'd look at spending. Yeah, $50,000. Wouldn't that be nice?
It's even impossible to spend it. But I guess given free rein, you could easily invest it. And I'm hearing that you'd invest it in your people and your equipment, and ultimately, I guess, the results for your kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, good luck. Good luck. You never know. Keep looking. So I guess my last question is a little related to this. I know what it's like to run a business, and I know how hard you work, and I know how hard many of the people I speak to work. And I have this thing about eating lunch, and I'm asking this question about eating lunch because I realize now, looking back at when I was the boss lady, I never ate lunch, and I rarely, rarely, rarely ever ate it on a plate. So do you take a lunch break, and what do you do?
Sure. Yes, I would say 80% of my days or my week I do take a lunch break, because I get hungry. So I need to stop and eat. So that actually is really good. I can't push through. So that does make me stop. I must say, I usually end up doing some type of work at the same time. Majority of the time, it would be a supervision session. So with my team, we would have lunch together, which is really nice and really lovely. But we would end up talking about work and clients and tricky clients and ideas. So, you know, that is it's time saving from one perspective, but also, you know, it means that you don't get a complete break also. And my journal resources and my pile of journals also sits on our lunchroom table. So if I have got, you know, a break to myself, which is quite lovely, I might flip through a journal article as well, which again, you know, is really productive, but it doesn't also always give you the break that you need in the middle part of your day. So, you know, I think, you know, trying to, you know, vary that would be good.
Sounds like a whole lot of working lunches, yeah. But at least you stop and perhaps step away from your computer and join the crew around the table. Yeah. That's inspiring.
It's one step in the right direction. There's lots of steps that we need to take, but it's certainly one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So for all the guys coming on my podcast, they have the chance to ask me a question. And I don't know, I think I mentioned this to you when we were prepping for this. Is there anything you want to ask me?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Yeah. No, I think, you know, just seeing kind of where NDIS is taking us, and, you know, kind of the pitfalls to watch out for. Because as you do with anything new, you hear the horror. You do hear the horror stories. So, you know, for the people that have had, you know, some more experience with that, you know, just what to look out for.
Personally, I think the NDIS is amazing and provides extraordinary opportunities and potential for people with disabilities. But I think it also needs a huge rethink, and I think it really needs a reset of the mindset, both for people with disabilities and their carers, and also now we're called disability service providers. And I suspect the guys that... Well, portal debacle aside, sure. I suspect that the providers that will really make the biggest impact are the ones that are super organised, that have a really huge heart in terms of local networking and partnerships, and are not just salesy in their marketing, but are truly, I'm doing this, putting my hands together, that are truly engaged with their local networks. And I think the guys that are going to enjoy the growth and all that growth brings are the ones that are really systemized, that have got amazing policies and procedures, not just written, but are really embedded in everything that the team does. So that bringing new people in isn't a major, major, major drama, that it is a, here we are, this is how we do things. We're just so delighted that you're here, rather than a 3-month kind of hiatus in service provision to onboard people. So I think the guys with the huge hearts who really network for everything they're worth and with their whole heart are going to be well positioned in their local neighbourhood markets to be, you know, the destination of choice. And the guys that are super organised with all their policies and procedures, great software, great IT support. And then I'd add one more thing, the guys that are thinking out of the box, that are really innovative and thinking ahead in terms of what participants and people with disabilities are wanting. And I think that needs us to kind of release a whole lot of this medical model and really step into the social model of disability and to really go out there and go rogue in terms of service development.
Fantastic. Exciting times. Exciting times. Yeah.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. So thank you so much for your time on this podcast. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. I've got a book to look up and I'm going to look for your name for further awards being won in your area, and I'd love to encourage you to go even bigger on the award scale. I think
sounds good.
I think you got it. I think it would be great, great learning, great learning. So thank you so much, and we'll check out, and I'll include as much of this in the show notes with the links to some of the references.
Great, great. Thanks for having me, Kathy.
Yeah. Happy listening. Thanks. Bye.
Big thanks for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you enjoyed this episode and all the other strong private practice stories in this, our very first season of Private Practice Secrets. If you're keen for some more private practice business info, we sure can help you out. Head on over to the nakerconsulting.com.au website and you'll find all sorts of bits and pieces there. Blogs, forms, web events, freebies, conferences and more. I'll spell that for you, nacre.com.au. Yeah, a weird name with a really, really cool story. While you're on the website, you are warmly invited to book in for a free 30-minute power coaching session. I really look forward to hearing a bit more about you and your business. And yes, you have full permission to pick my brains. Thanks for listening. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, and I'm wishing you and your business a brilliant day.